Brown, Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Planned Parenthood in the news with this measure by President Obama to ensure taxpayer funding for the abortion giant. Going to talk a little bit about that this afternoon. And an interesting test I conducted, non-scientific, I'll give you that. Still, about as relevant as anything I can imagine this day and age. And we'll get to that. We'll discuss that coming up. Also, a nativity display in Italy being removed for fear of offense to others. So we'll talk about why that might not be the necessarily best tactic. And we'll talk about the war on Christmas and happy holidays and all that kind of stuff as well. And the feds hike the rates on interest rates, and the markets respond by dropping. So even though it's not supposed to go that direction. But we'll discuss all of that and more this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Today we're back in Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. The news from Aleppo just getting more, I think, disturbing, concerning, and then questionable, apparently, because there are those who wonder how this is happening, especially, I don't know if you saw, I think I posted it on my Facebook page, this interesting video of showing East and West Aleppo. And honestly, I haven't researched this enough to know how big this city is geographically, but you got one side that looks like normal everyday life, you got the other side that looks like a battle zone, and then you've got the one side who seem to be celebrating what's happening on the other side. It's bizarre to say the least, but apparently there is a rebel stronghold in this city on one side of the city, not on the other. Therefore, the army for the Syrian army battling that rebel site to try to get them dislodged. And that seems to be the dynamic from what we can tell. But again, we're here on the other side of the world and we don't really know. What we do see are these images of suffering people that, regardless of what exactly the amount of geography it happens to be, is or what's happening strategically from these two camps, that in my opinion is of least concern when you simply look at the suffering of these individuals who are in this caught in the crossfire here, and that's what's challenging. But one interesting, I guess, specific of this was apparently a young girl who had been tweeting stories and posting stories from this battlefront, and it was called enough into question that perhaps this was fake, that some independent researchers, like they do, Snopes-type people, looked at this and said, no, it's real. So it's interesting to look at this and wonder exactly what is going on and how much of it is hype and how much of it is some degree of propaganda. To me, that doesn't matter in the face of human suffering. And that's the travesty, regardless of how widespread or exactly who's angling what. People are suffering. We've seen that. We've seen these images. And, of course, there are those who will insist that everything is fake, right? Nothing. Oh, Sandy Hook, right? We've heard that one. That's just a gun lobby, or anti-gun lobby, I should say. propaganda piece to make us get rid of all of our guns. So crazy what we see out there. One of the crazier, more interesting, I guess, and why fact check this one? I'm just like, of all things to fact, Santa Claus is not running for office, okay? And to my knowledge, he might be promoting something, but if he is, so be it. And it's this guy, whatever his name escapes me, the story is over on my Facebook page, you can look at it. But this guy who dresses as Santa, this is kind of his thing. He's got a pretty authentic Santa look as far as the look we know. I think he's got a real deal massive handlebar mustache. And if you've seen me recently, because this fast that I've been doing since All Saints Day, I've also not shaven my face. So I've got a pretty substantial amount of facial hair. It's shocking. It's actually shocking when people see me, and they haven't seen me in a while, and I probably should be concerned when somebody sees me and they say, because it happened. And I have people introducing themselves to me. Hello, I'm, who are you? Yeah, so that's interesting. But this guy, this Santa guy, has got some real deal facial hair. Rivaling even me, even though I've been called Santa Claus recently. But apparently, according to reports, there's no substantiation of the story that he tells in this very detailed account of being at this young boy's bed and giving him Paw Patrol toys of some sort. The boy saying he doesn't think he's going to make it till Christmas, and the Santa Claus guy saying, hey, well, when you get to the pearly gates, you just tell him that, tell them you're Santa's number one elf. It's a great story. It's heartbreaking and hard to hear. And then the boy dies in his arms and he runs out of the hotel room, hospital room. And he's crying as he's recounting it. I mean, my goodness, right? My limited capacity for remembering things, and I remember the story in detail after watching this video once because it's so vivid what he tells. Now, good storytellers can make things up, and it can be that way, sure. But the question is, why does it matter? I mean, really, why does it matter? Because why are we fact-checking Santa Claus? You know, I get somebody who's running for office, somebody who might be in control of something that could really affect your life. We need to fact check that. Or something that is so outlandish, like some of these crazy news stories we've seen that could incite some sort of violence against someone or some sort of retaliation, perhaps even. I think we got to watch that. There's a degree of social responsibility. You've heard me talk about this when it comes to journalism. No one is going to react in this way except to go, right? I mean, there's going to be a catharsis. Good art is cathartic, right? I mean, there's something beautiful about the expression of emotion, this emotive connection to the art, whatever that is. And my goodness, when that's elicited, which isn't always done well, but when it's done well, that's great. So I'm looking at this going, why are we fact-checking Santa Claus? Why are we so concerned whether this is authentic or not? Now, I can understand if somebody saw this, they were moved by it, they decided, hey, we're going to investigate this because we want to talk to the family, right? We want to get that side of the story because the Santa story, wow, it's moving. It's heartbreakingly emotional. So let's dig into this more and let's find out where's the family now, what's happening, what's going on. I get that. But when you can't substantiate the story, do we now discredit this? Well, it was all fake. So, yeah, that reaction that you felt, that meant nothing. Because we react to art. We react to good literature, to good storytelling, to good movies. Visual art. I mean, there are times I'm just compelled emotionally into sensing something so visceral just from looking at something amazing, where I know the artist has poured blood, sweat, and tear into making this thing what it is. When you see that kind of expression, why do you want to discredit it? Again, the story may not be real. Is that a concern? Ultimately, I don't know. And I get, and on the other side, I get the dynamic of let's check this out. Let's see if this passes the smell test. Like the Syria thing, I get, we want to look at that and go, how much of this is really happening and how much of this is some sort of bizarre propaganda that could potentially just be us getting played, right? I mean, I get that. I get that we want to wonder how much of this is, because it's a war, right? It's an insurgency. It may not be a full-blown civil war, but there are rebels who are undoubtedly opposing the government, and they're doing it violently, militarily. So in that, there's going to be something. There's going to be two sides. We may disagree with both of them. We may agree with one of them, but there are two sides. There is this and there's that, and when we investigate this, we need to kind of go, okay, well, let's parse out some truth here, because there will be, without question, there will be some degree of propaganda. I promise you that. Just because it's politicized, it's polarized to the point that there's this and that. But Santa Claus telling a story about a dying child, which is so beautifully heartbreaking, why would we want to question that? Why do we go to that extreme? You know, have a degree of disbelief. Have a willing suspension. That's what we called it in theater. I had theater training and studied theater, and this beautiful understanding that there's a time when you can captivate an audience into believing that what is happening is real, even though it's not. They know. They know it's not. But they're enraptured into what is happening. That's great. That's what you want. Who cares if it's true? At that point, you're not telling a story for the sake of its accuracy. You're conveying a story for the sake of its emotion. And ultimately, maybe coming through that experience with some degree of catharsis, because that catharsis is what brings about the opportunity for change. Because a good story is going to dismantle us emotionally and restructure us. And that is what Jesus himself does, right? It's this life, this birth, life, death, resurrection, ascension. It's this beautiful expression of building, falling apart, rebuilding, and triumph, right? That's how a good story works. And I'm not saying Jesus is just a good story, but it is a good story. And it changes our life, as this 3-minute Santa Claus thing can do. Why fact check? More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. So apparently, Obama is ensuring as best he can, let's put it this way, as best he can in his short remaining time left as president to ensure that Planned Parenthood keeps its taxpayer funding status. And Cecile Richards on MSNBC talking about this, and I posted this over my Facebook page. But in addition to that, because this is what I keep hearing, and it's time and time again I hear, well, it's essential services to women like cancer screening, right? That's what I hear. Cancer screening. We save lives. This is what we do. This is what we do every day. Abortion is a tiny percentage of the whatever we do, whatever the stuff you do, the stuff you do in a day. Words are escaping me now. Services you provide, I think, is maybe what I was about to say. But do you see this? And then, so my question is, okay, well, I'm going to take you at your word. So let's see what I can come up with here. So if I was wanting to seek cancer screening as a woman, what am I going to do? We do what all of us do this day and age. We don't pick up a phone book anymore. We don't ask a friend. We don't drive down the street. We go to the internet and we Google it up. Okay, bam, what do you get? Generally, at least this is how I operate. I don't know how you do. I will never go beyond the top five searches because I'm going to find what I'm going to look for within the top three, probably. If I ever get to five, that's almost unheard of this day and age. I definitely won't spend the time filtering down through 10. This is search engine optimization central, right? This is what we do when we have services to offer, when we have a business to offer, when we're looking for people to find us because we provide something. We want SEO. This means top three, top five, max. Number one is where you, if you want to, if you own it, right? If this is your world, this is your thing, you want to be in the number one. Cancer screening for women, Planned Parenthood is not even in the top 10 on a Google search. Now, if that's what you're touting, that this is why you deserve taxpayer funding because this is your world, then make it your world. Make it your world. Don't just say that. Because, you know, I know I'm old school. I get it. Because I say what I mean and I mean what I say. And if there's any duplicity in me, it's blindness, which there very well could be, but I work very hard, even sacrificially, to stand behind my word. Ask anyone who knows me. Ask those who know me well. Those who are closest to me will back that up, I promise you. That if I have to sacrifice, even somewhat detrimentally, to ensure that I do what I say I'm going to do, I'm going to do it. So if this is your world, and this is why you're on the taxpayer's dime, then maybe show us that. Maybe show us that there's some meat to that, because at the very least, when I Google something, I'm going to find it. Right? I mean, if that's your thing, that's how this world works. Even if you're old school, this is how it works. And hopefully old school comes from an ethic that says, this is the way we do things. We're going to do it right or not do it at all. And something of this nature makes you really question. But there's a lot of things I question. First off, an executive director of any nonprofit who makes $350,000 annually. I'm not opposed to people making money, but if you're going to be on that echelon of income, it should be for a for-profit, right? It should not be because you are getting taxpayer funding and donations. That's for-profit CEO money, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you've committed your life, and believe me, because I know the nonprofit world. I spent a lot of years in the nonprofit world. And there's a ton of people who just slog away at almost poverty level income in top positions because they have a heart for what they're doing and they don't want to feel like they're bilking their organization. They really want to commit themselves to what they're doing in a way that, especially when it's service-oriented, especially when they know that what they're doing is helping people out, their heart is in it. They're in it because it's what they believe in. They're not there to make money. And I know there are people who make a whole heck of a lot more than $350,000 a year. I get that. But if you're getting $500 million, $500 million in taxpayer funding annually, And you're saying the reason for that is because you're providing essential services to women like cancer screening, and that's like the first thing you say after essential services, then back that up somehow, because it's not really adding up. And then, of course, President-elect Trump has vowed to defund Planned Parenthood as long as they do abortions, which I certainly support that if he's willing to do it, which maybe he is, and if he can do it. And then there are those who say, well, Planned Parenthood would go away. Well, which is it? Right? It's the old Raising Arizona. Which is it, Sonny? If and I freeze, I sure can't hit the floor. If and I hit the floor, I'm going to be in motion. I won't be able to freeze. So what are we talking about here? Are we talking about something that's truly insignificant in the grand scheme of things as far as the way they do what they do and why they're there? Or are we not? So I would much rather, quite frankly, I would much rather just someone be honest. You know what? Whatever, Lawrence, I think the guy that Cecile Richards was talking to on MSNBC, I don't watch TV, so I don't know any of these people. I know Cecile Richards because I know who she is, but I don't know the news anchors. So she's on MSNBC, and she's talking to this guy. I would much rather her just say, you know what, Lawrence, we got to keep abortion alive in this country, which I know is kind of oxymoronic saying that. We got to keep this. This is crucial to women's rights. You know, just embolden your base. This is a woman's right to choose, to ensure her destiny. Abortions are what we're about. And we're going to make sure the women keep that right, because by golly, come hell or high water, we're going to keep on doing what we're doing because that is our mission. All right? I would much rather hear that, even if I disagree with it. I'd much rather hear that conviction than this disingenuous, wishy-washy weirdness of telling me you're doing something that you're not. Don't do that. Embolden your base and make your cause. But here's why that can't work. Because the gig is up. And people do know that the primary service of Planned Parenthood is abortion. And after the delayed in videos, which again, I didn't disagree with the videos. I think that was a very bizarre misconception. I disagreed with them calling it journalism. Call it activism. As an activist, do whatever the heck you want. You're an activist. My goodness, the more radical and extreme and exposing and dangerous, good for you. You're an activist. I don't care which side of the activistic fence you're on. That's what activists do. You expose, you challenge, you open, you share, you boldly go into these areas that are dangerous. That's good. That's really good. Just don't call it journalism. It's just not journalism. Journalism is bold. Yes, bold because we take a stance of social responsibility. Bold because we're willing to expose things that others won't, but not from a sneaky way. Journalism does research. Journalism does hard work, stays up late, meets deadlines, works really, really hard to ensure that the stories are there when they're supposed to be there. It's a discipline. It's not activism. Activism is another world, which I'm in favor of. I will support you. Call yourself an activist. Do whatever you want. I'm going to applaud that. Great. Terrific. But it did lead to a greater demise of public trust of Planned Parenthood. So this is why there's a challenge with just going out there with, hey, we're gonna stand on what we do, because the public's not going to buy that. At this point, they're not going to buy that. So that's why they have to present things the way they present it, in a very innocuous fashion, in a way that would simply give us a smokescreen that really doesn't tell us anything, not from their own words, because they know if they reveal what they're all about, the gruesome realities are now exposed to the point that there would be those who would simply fight it even more viciously than it's being fought now. So they're in a tough spot. I see that. I get that. But you know what? You don't need taxpayer funding to survive. You can do what you do. Embolden your base. You're always going to have those that will support you. You've got a profit margin on what you're doing in your business. Adjust your prices. Make it a business. And go for it. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
If you like what you're hearing, become a friend of the show. Visit RedboxMedia.com and click Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Good afternoon. We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. USA Today with, I think, Indianapolis Star, expose into 20 years of information, going back 20 years into the world of professional, semi-professional, and Olympic gymnastics, to the point that now it appears that this is a unfortunate hotbed of child exploitation, sexual exploitation, and abuse. And you hate to hear anything of this nature, because when children, I think there's a common denominator. I believe this, and maybe I'm wrong. I think there's a lot of debate on, well, that's your truth, my truth. There's a lot of debate when it comes to the realities of objective morality, right? The dictatorship of moral relativism, I think, as we heard Pope Benedict call it. But there's one area that I've discovered where it kind of seems like that all falls away, and that's anything that has to do with the abuse of children, especially the sexual abuse of children. That no one's going to say that that's okay. No one's going to say that, well, that's your truth. We think it's, that you're not going to find that, because we're going to always default to, as we should, the protection of children and saying, if they're underage, this is not consensual. I'm sorry. You could say a 14-year-old is capable of consent, and we would argue otherwise, right? We would undoubtedly argue otherwise. And this apparently, in this information, shows at least 20 years of a real problem, which says to me it's going to be tough for, depending on how much traction this gets in the media, and we may have seen it all, because I posted on Facebook and I'll get responses to things and people will want to talk and debate and converse, and this one's got no blip, but it's unfortunate, it's challenging, it's terrible, and it could be really tough for organizations to survive who are out there making their living on gymnastics training. But I would say this, I think that now's the time, just like the church, Catholic Church saw a problem and said, okay, we got to do something about this. Let's make sure that we ensure the public that we are doing everything we can to protect the children who are in our environment. Let's do everything we can to make sure that our policies are up and up, our training is up and up, that we have proper monitoring everywhere. There's no question about anything. You got to shore it up. That's what you got to do in something of this nature. And it's much like the Penn State Sandusky, like, where did this come from? This seems to be one of those bombshells. Will it get the traction? I don't know. But I tell you this, I don't want my kids in gymnastics, right? That's my first reaction. I'm like, I'm immediately protective. So where it goes from here, time will tell, but it's tragic nonetheless. interesting story about a nativity display in Italy. At least one priest saying, we wanted not to offend, therefore we're not doing it this year. Yeah, I get the sensitivities. I get the let's not be too in your face. And even, you know, honestly, I've chilled back on the Merry Christmas thing. I used to make it a point almost in that stupid culture warrior sort of fashion that I would say, if somebody said, okay, happy holidays, I would say, Merry Christmas to you, buddy. Merry Christmas. All right. Which was horribly insincere. And I've now, even to the point now where I generally, I'm going to say happy holidays, right? I don't know what your faith is. You may not believe in my Christmas. You may be of another faith tradition. And I'll respect that. You know why? Because I've also said, it's still a holy day, right? We know that. So we have covertly inserted our faith into that by saying happy holidays. Holiday. What is a holiday? It's a holy day. That's what it is. That's where we get the word, so it's okay. It's okay. Why would we fight that? Happy holidays. I may even say it and offend you. And if I do, then that's another thing. We got time to talk about this, and we'll get back to the nativity thing. If you find yourself offended, really, about things all the time, that really is your problem. It really is your problem. That's something we've got to take ownership of. I had to work through that. Please understand. I say this as, I think, some would argue otherwise, a recovering egomaniac. Now, for me, and it's not just for me, I think it's for anyone. I think this is true. I think this is, you can do what I do and talk on a radio show and do public appearances and be the guy that's the center of attention at parties and whatever, and have no ego. Really, you can't. You can be entertaining. You could be gifted. You could be whatever, performer, and even never have those platforms, but still be that guy who's kind of has that sort of whatever you want to call it about them, and do it ego free. Because here's where ego comes into play, and this is the problem. I don't care if you're the most reclusive introvert who never leaves their home. If you're offended personally by everything, that's an ego issue. If you are so fragile that anything can hurt you, not only hurt you, but send you to a point of rage or send you to a point of reaction. Everybody who gets into a road rage issue are egomaniacs. Anybody who honks their horn aggressively. Now I'll tap, hey, buddy, you've been sitting there for a while. Like, I'll give them 10 seconds, generally. If you haven't pulled away after 10 seconds, I'm not going to be like, argh. I'm going to go, beep, beep. Hey, do you know? I know you're on your phone. I get it. I do it too. Right? But if you're so offended by everything, that is your problem. It's not everyone else's problem. I'm sorry. And the problem is simply you have such a fragile ego that anything can penetrate that. Now, this is where the oneness of unity with our God, understanding that look what Christ did. Even at his trial, he offered no defense. He was not offended by being crucified, right? He didn't offer a retaliation. He just simply said, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. Knowing that what he was experiencing at that particular time was the will of God. And even though he prayed in the garden, if it be your will, let this cup pass from me so I don't have to endure this, in his human prayer, he still endured it without complaint, without ego. So that's something we got to understand. If you're constantly offended, it's time for a reality check. Look for your true self. Find your true, how were you created? I promise you this, you were not created with an ego. God did not create that. That has been learned. It's been formed some way through entitlement. You think you're entitled and you're not. Just that simple. So for this priest, which I know it's going to offend people, how dare you, which I jokingly said this on Facebook, this is offensive to me, whatever. Because they say, we're going to try not to offend people. I get that. But don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Because if you're displaying something that's of truth, which the nativity is of truth, and it's an important truth, it's such an important truth that we celebrate Christmas because of this event, then that's a beauty that needs to be expressed. Because if we can see, and I know now it's iconic, right? The nativity scene is just iconic. It is what it is. We kind of, there are those who are offended. There are those who are emboldened. There are those who don't even notice it because it's just an icon. But if we were to the point of going, this is history altering theology of incarnation. And if we understand what that means, which few of us do, but if we understand that the incarnation is where it's at, right? That's what it's about. Because we have a unique expression as Catholics. So this isn't a prophet, right? This isn't someone speaking for God. This is God incarnate in human form, giving us the example of how to live in a way that can make us like God. Because in his image and likeness, we're created. His image and likeness was incarnate. Therefore, we have this beautiful understanding of how all of this can work effectively when we see and embrace that. Don't hide that. We don't need to hide that. Granted, the best nativity scene is us, right? The best manger that we can show is us walking around doing what Jesus did. That's what we need to be able to do. But we shouldn't hide that reality because it is a reality. It is a truth. It's not offensive. It's on display for us to see and be reminded. But the bigger thing is expressing that incarnation in us, right? That's what it should remind us of. So we have time for it. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.